I discovered Bitcoin, and at some point I figured out that everything the music industry does is extremely fiat because we didn't try to develop talent anymore and invest into them actually being good musicians. But the only thing we did, we took TikTok stars, put them into the studio with some musicians, and then we created this fake brand around them.
All right, welcome to another episode of the Block Reward Podcast. This week, we're joined by special guest, Bitcoin International Man of Mystery, Max DeMarco.
Yeah.
Welcome.
Man of Mystery. Thanks for having me, man.
Yeah.
The studio is pretty sick, to be honest.
Yeah, our first live episode in the new studio, so very exciting.
I'm honored.
Maybe, Max, just for the benefit of our guests who maybe don't know you, just can you tell us a little bit about yourself so we can get a sense for where we're going today?
Yeah, sure. So I'm an independent filmmaker, so I do documentaries about Bitcoin. I'm running a media agency within Bitcoin. But initially, I'm a trained producer from the music industry. And my orange pill story is that I was working in the music industry, creating artists or helping artists to brand themselves and then like break them in Germany. That was my initial job. And then I discovered Bitcoin. And at some point, I figured out that everything the music industry does is extremely fiat because we didn't try to develop talent anymore and invest into them actually being good musicians. But the only thing we did, we took TikTok stars, put them into the studio with some musicians, and then we created this fake brand around them. And once I then understood what Bitcoin was and how the money actually influences culture, and I was part of this degrading cultural process, I was like, oh, okay, I actually don't enjoy what I'm doing that much. So I tried to find a way to contribute in the Bitcoin space. As an audio engineer and producer, I then tried to find a way how I can adapt my skills in the Bitcoin space. And then since then, I've been producing podcasts behind the scenes of a lot of Bitcoiners. And then at some point started doing my own videos because I not only wanted to people help put the message out, but also wanted to like orange pill people to actually show them what Bitcoin is about. So then I started like roughly 3 years ago, starting to travel the world, nomading, going to different Bitcoin circular economies, and yeah, just taking the camera with me wherever I was and doing my own content around this. So that's a very short,
history of me. That's very short. Maybe just to pull it apart a little bit more, when you say the music industry is so fiat, like what exactly do you mean by that?
A lot you see in the music industry is just fake and fabricated in a sense to make you believe that it is this shiny thing and the real value behind it. There are like, it's almost like fiat money in a sense that a lot of people think, oh, it's this valuable thing. But if you look into it, the fundamentals are just flawed in a sense. So what do I mean by this? For thousands of years, the artist needed to put a lot of proof of work into actually trying to understand his style of music, his albums, and it was a representation of his. It was a reflection of his life and how he perceived the world. And then he kind of put it into this musical masterpiece, let's say, which, yeah, was rooted in him trying to express his emotions, maybe in music. And now the fiat part is that now nobody cares about this anymore, where it's just like, how do we create something to make a profit? So it's not about, oh, we're trying to do something beautiful. We're trying to do actually something which touches humans. It's rather the industry is structured in a way that now with marketing, with social media and all of this, the overall goal is how do we make the most profit by positioning anybody we can into this construct, which is music. And what do I mean by that is like, they literally just take like people who are like famous on TikTok, put them into a studio with somebody who knows a little bit of music theory, then they make it sound good with all of the technical abilities we have today. And then they put shit ton of money onto like marketing, trying to get it viral so that then they get the money about it. And I see a lot of problems in that because like that's kind of how culture degrades slowly. Like the music isn't as relevant. Like if you think about it, like in the 70s, 80s, we had so many songs that people still love today. But the lifespan of a song is almost like 2 weeks, 3 weeks with most of the charts. And so this was kind of the fiat poison, which is just like nobody cares about beauty anymore in music. It's just about the profit.
Yeah, that's really interesting. It makes me think of, you know, this same problem sort of equally applies to physical art, architecture, movies and film.
It's because like a lot of Bitcoiners talk about this a lot, but it's like money touches so many different aspects of life. And if something like culture or art or physical art, just if it's not about the beauty and the art itself anymore, but about the money, it's just like inherently the incentives of the artists change as well. That's why we see, for example, all of those ugly art, which is just like my 10-year-old sister could probably do it. But by prompting it up and like there's even some conspiracies about that it's like money laundering and mm-hmm. so on. So it's just like you see it in so many different ways. But then as a Bitcoiner, you also see the bright side of things where there are actually a lot of artists who go into the other side where it's like, okay, I actually want to make something beautiful. I want to contribute something which is long term, which has a long term focus. So because it was so dark being in the music industry, I think I was then so overwhelmed and so happy and having this bright future outlook by connecting with Bitcoiners that I was like, okay, I'm going to do anything I can to actually be in this space and contribute there.
Yeah, it makes me think of, you know, so this problem of melting money forces people to pursue more and more money all the time at the expense of the quality. And so sort of what you're saying is the opportunity to earn money that doesn't melt enables you to focus on quality and creating great things. Mm-hmm. And we were talking offline about this idea of value for value and the purpose of value for value. So mm-hmm. maybe what does value for value mean for you?
A lot of my videos and art, which I do, is kind of like I finance it myself without a profit incentives per se. So I did the Nostr documentary with Jack Dorsey together, where we just talked about the fundamentals of what Nostr is, what it can do, and kind of a theory for newbies. And I financed the whole thing for myself. It's like a 25-minute documentary. I've been traveling for it. And I put the money up front because I thought, okay, it's important. And then I put a QR code at the end and was like, okay, if you find this valuable, you can give me value back. So that's kind of the thing of having a value for value model. I try to give out value into the world, which was in this case a documentary. And then I'm just seeing what the world gives me back, what the value is giving me back. And the theory behind it is that it is a little bit like a street musician who basically just plays his music because he wants to play music. And there are people just giving him money, what it's worth for them. But since we're on the internet, this is actually scalable now. So what does this mean? A street musician often gets like 20 cent, 50 cent, maybe a dollar here. But there are often people who then give him maybe $50 or $100. And this is kind of the way a street musician makes money, because there are very wealthy people who appreciate what you do and say like, okay, I'm going to give you $50 or $100. And now with social media and especially Nostr, the idea behind this is that you can reach such a bigger amount of people, and therefore the chance of somebody finding it so valuable for you to then also give you maybe $1,000, maybe 500 or something like that is higher. And it kind of is a little bit against the advertisement model, where it's like you're trying to just put it out in the universe and see what the universe brings you back. And I've been running this model now for like 2 or 3 years. There's still a lot of problems with it because not a lot of people are used yet to this. But with the Nostr documentary, I'm like, probably there were like 800 to 1,200 people who sent me donations back, and I still get donations today. So it's like, I still wouldn't say that it's 100% proven that it's functioning, because we need to wait until we have enough people on the Bitcoin standard to actually want to also part with their sats, right? So, but the concept is very, very promising, and I'm going to keep doing it and see what's happening with it. Yeah.
That's so cool. Yeah. We did an episode with the last episode of 2024 with Will from Demis. And talking about Nostromo, we didn't really talk about, I mean, we did talk about Zaps, but we didn't talk about how the way that Nostromo functions enables a different sort of revenue model, like you said, away from the advertising model with the revenue going purely to the creators. Maybe we could spend a few minutes just talking about that and your experience.
So for the people who don't know what Zaps are, it's basically everybody's used to liking a post, right? It's just like, it's a click. So Nostr enables to do this with monetary value, that like if you post something and I like it and I find value in it, as I said before, now this protocol gives me the opportunity to send you actually money. So the process is the same like a like. You just press another icon and then you say, okay, I want to send you 1 cent. I want to send you 20 cent or $2. And that's the wonderful part about Nostr, because it is baked into the protocol, which means it's not any payment provider or anything else who actually facilitates it, but it's on the protocol and it uses Bitcoin. And this makes actually, for me as a content creator, for example, it makes a huge difference, because I think one valuable part about this is that you get so much, like you get real feedback as a content creator, because as a content creator, you want to know, okay, what do my people like? What don't they like? And a like has no inherent cost. Anybody could just like it and that's it. But now by including Zaps, there is an actual cost for the consumer, where I think me as a content creator, I get a way better feedback from the consumer, because likes are kind of a little bit like proof of stake in a sense. Like there's no real work behind it. You can just like it. But if somebody zaps you, he must have actually really appreciated what you posted. So my hope with this is that not only that people have the ability to earn on new monetization models, but also that it's gonna have an impact on the art itself, because like artists or creators have now a better feedback mechanism onto their art, and hopefully will be able to identify earlier, okay, what works, what doesn't work. And I see some feedback loop happening, that if the sooner as a content creator you do this, the more likely it is to have a better learning curve than like fiat content creators, because it's just like, it's a different feeling if you get $5 for a video when somebody's zapping it and you're like, oh, okay, this is actually cool. So it's something which is so hard to describe, but as I said, I think it is a great way to find those new monetization models, as well as this feedback loop just had an impact on my art or my videos. And I think a lot of other people will hopefully do so in the future as well.
Yeah, earlier in the conversation, you used this term incentive mechanisms, and it's like it's really creating a new pathway for you to be continually adjusting your strategy and seeing a real result.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah, it's funny. I mean, this is kind of at the same time where there's lots of sort of chatter about the fairness or inequality of how people get paid by X for creating their content on X, and X has recently taken away a number of people's blue checks and censoring people. And even this talk around like that X, you know, Elon has ambitions for X to become kind of a payments company and like branch into this financial. It's such an interesting like contrast for me that he wants to be a freedom maximalist, but at the same time, he really is a centralization maximalist at the same time.
Yeah. And it's also because the incentives are kind of wrong in a sense, because he is relying on the advertisement money to actually be able to run his business. And on Nostr, advertisement doesn't really work, because you can, as a user, if there is a client or an app which integrates like advertisements and you don't like it, you can have a very, very similar experience on another client. So I think this also provides so much more freedom on the developer side and the product side, which we still need to figure out what a viable monetization of Nostr will be in the future. But it's just like, because it's on a fair playing field of like developers as well as consumers, it's not like on X where the developers have so much more power than the users, because you can't have just your same following, which you have on Twitter, like if you leave Twitter, it's gone, right? And on Noster, it's really leveling the playing field again, because if the developers fuck up something, you got just go to another developer or another app, and therefore it holds them accountable automatically. And now Elon can do whatever he wants, and we don't have power to fight against him.
How's your experience been with the level of like traffic and people who are on Noster? That's the biggest obstacle right now, right?
It is low. It is like, we got to be honest, it's very low. But it's again, I think 10 likes on Noster, for example, are worth more than 100 likes on Twitter. Mm-hmm. Because it's just like the signal in general is higher, I would say. The quality of people and the quality of content I see there is extremely high. But having said that, as a content creator, of course, it's about having the biggest reach. So I'm also not a Noster maxi in the sense that I don't have Twitter or deleted it. I still use YouTube, just because it is still a limiting factor. The user numbers are not as high as on other platforms. But I think it's fine. Like, Noster's 4 years now, I think, old, or five. And it's just like, for that amount of time, I think we got already very far. And there are people who kind of go the extreme, like Matt Adele or Gigi, all of those people. And we also need those people. But if you're kind of a content creator, I think it's totally fine to run both of them and try to, like, for example, for me, I cross-post a lot what I post on Noster on other platforms to try to get more people on it.
So you are running a business that you have transitioned to being a Bitcoin standard business, and you must have learned so much along the way.
Yes.
How has the process been for you?
Very good and very tough. Because I would say as a business owner in the Bitcoin space, you are really impacted by the bull and bear markets. And I think this is extremely healthy. Why do I say so? So because if you run a business, you can have suddenly an influx of clients during the bull market. Everybody has money. Everybody wants to produce videos. Everybody's like, oh, okay, here, do this and that. Then you might scale up your team. You might get a nice office in the studio or whatever. I think this is great because you have the ability to grow. But as a business, you also need to be humble enough to understand, oh, I'm actually in the Bitcoin space, so there's a bear market around the corner. Pretty, like, nobody knows how deep it's going to be, but there's probably one coming. Like, and so it always holds you very accountable to stay humble and not scale too much. Because when the bear market hits, for example, like in my experience, there was like 50% of the clients suddenly were like, we don't have money for this anymore. Mm. And that's like, in the first space, you're like, oh shit, okay, what do I do now? But this taught me so much as a business owner on how to sustainably actually grow and focus on providing enough value that even in the bear market, the value that I provide for people is enough that they say like, okay, this amount of money is worth it. And so I think it's like a cleansing system, because like if you have fiat money, or if you're like in the fiat industry, you might be on the run of like, okay, you're raising money and it like money is cheap, but you don't really like, sometimes you might lose the focus on the product and the value that you actually provide. And again, on being in the Bitcoin standard, I think by being linked to the Bitcoin cycles, this inherently leads, like, as a business owner, you need to inherently do it, because you know, like, okay, if I don't do this, I'm going to be fucked, and I need to get loose of all of my employees and so on. So it's definitely harder than on the bit in the fiat industry, I would say, because it's still so early, but it's just a low time preference way of building a business. Because I think all the people I've been meeting over the last years have been incredibly good people. And I think it's just like, all of us want to go into one direction, and it's like the small community helping out each other. So even the gains or the money, which you might not make in the first 4 or 8 years of your business, if you make it through the first 1 or 2 cycles, then I'm just like super positive that then the products will get bigger and bigger and the project. So that's why I'm still keeping doing it and I love it. Yeah.
So your customers only pay you in Bitcoin? You only accept Bitcoin? Like how does that work?
We have about 95% of clients who pay us in Bitcoin. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So because we are very niche, so we focus on media for Bitcoiners as well as basically, right now, we're even more niche because we just have Bitcoin podcasters and we create their brand around their podcast, making their reels, making their full podcast. And all of them want to pay in Bitcoin. So therefore, we don't even need to touch a lot of bank accounts or anything, which is a very cool way of operating, to be honest, because all my employees are Bitcoiners. Everybody wants to get paid in Bitcoin. I don't own any fiat since 2 years, 100% on a Bitcoin standard. I sell every month, basically, Bitcoin. So we can get into this, how living on a Bitcoin standard looks like. But the good thing also being in the Bitcoin space is I don't need to do a lot of outreach because everybody in the Bitcoin space is like, oh, I want to pay for this with Bitcoin. Well, there's not a lot of people who offer this with Bitcoin. And it's like, okay, it's kind of like everything mouth-to-mouth marketing in a sense. So yeah, we just onboarded our first fiat client 4 weeks ago. And before that, everything was 100% Bitcoin.
Okay. So then obviously, yeah, the assets inside your, the retained capital inside your company is also in Bitcoin.
Yeah.
And other than, planning for bear markets, have there been any really big learnings for you managing a business that is actually also running on Bitcoin?
Let me think about it. I mean, sometimes there are things which you also there are benefits of running a fiat company in a sense. I don't have I'm not building any credit line or anything, right? It's that's a bad thing, actually. But also I don't really want to So I'm personally living on a Bitcoin standard, which means I live on credit every month, but I pay it off every month. So I don't want to build a massive credit over months or something. And I also don't want to do this with a business because I think I just want to have the revenue high enough to be paying for all my expenses. So, and for now it's been great on a Bitcoin standard because, now we're almost at 100K. So, it's been the right decision to be on the Bitcoin standard. But as I said, there are those negative things, not building a credit line. And yeah, this is, I would say, the biggest downside of it. Yeah.
Yeah. So you mentioned that sort of functionally in the day to day, you're using credit, you're selling Bitcoin at the end of every month. And this is how you interact. Because I think one of the big questions people often have about how you actually live on Bitcoin is how you spend it effectively, because navigating the payment rails, and then obviously you're traveling all over the world,
yes,
interacting in different countries.
Exactly. So that's the easiest one. I had some Bitcoin-backed credit cards, which I don't use anymore, because it's just it's so much easier to just have a fiat credit card and then pay off whatever you need in a month. Because the spreads were higher with the Bitcoin cards, and some of them weren't accepted in different parts of the world. So that's why I don't have any issue interacting with fiat. And it's also I'm maybe one of the persons who say I also don't care too much if people businesses I interact with accept Bitcoin or not. Of course, I would prefer it, but because I am on a Bitcoin standard nevertheless, and I just use my credit card, I think it's it doesn't really impact me, because this is such an easy way of doing. And if you just pay it off every month, it's just a habit. I also think spending Bitcoin is the right way, because everybody talks about DCAing into Bitcoin, but if you're 100%, I'm also DCAing out of Bitcoin. It's not that I want to cash out and at 200K or something. It's just whatever I need, I'm going to pay out. And that's for me, a healthy and humble way of how I use Bitcoin.
Yeah, that's a really interesting way to look at it. I haven't heard it expressed exactly that way. And it makes me think about how, if you go back maybe before 1971, in the 50s or even earlier, that was really before the debt-based society, where people went into debt to have the things that they want, and people would pay for things with cash. You would buy a new car when you had the money to buy the car. And businesses would be run the same way. They would be run out of cash flow instead of going into debt to start a business. We did an episode in the summer where we were talking about this idea where even now in today's world, most people sort of go into debt to make money from their fiat jobs.
Yeah. And it's like almost being on a Bitcoin standard and being a Bitcoin positive business it's so extraordinary to do that. Like if you think about it, if you just earn like 1 cent more every month, you're actually Bitcoin positive to a certain degree. And if you think about it, this is so rare and actually such a good thing to achieve, because a lot of fiat companies might look fiat profitable and, like, as you say, getting some, like, financing themselves through debt. But how many of those companies are actually profitable in Bitcoin terms, you know? So my only goal is to have a business which is Bitcoin positive every month. And it's like this, keep it simple. This has been working for the last 4 or 5 years for me. And that's like, I never used debt. I don't plan on using debt in the future, because there are actually a lot of Bitcoiners who talk about it as well. It's more from the Islamic finance, from the angle where it's like debt is bad, and I couldn't properly articulate what it is about. But it's just also for me like a feeling, it's always shitty to own somebody money and you're like, oh, I need to perform this way, da da da. But I feel like if you just frame it in a way, I want to have a Bitcoin positive business, it just keeps everything so simple, but you have this North Star, which you're going towards. And I think this is like so healthy as a business owner to not overcomplicate it here and there, but just be like, okay, as long as it's Bitcoin positive and I want to increase this margin over the month, that's like, it changed my whole life in a certain degree.
Yeah, that's so cool. I never really thought about how significant the problem of businesses operating on money that it's continually becoming less valuable really
exactly.
is.
Yeah. Yeah. And then if you price those revenues, let's say even like the big companies in Bitcoin, you know, the last 10 years, like, okay, they say, okay, they have, I don't know, 5% more revenues every year. And like, oh yeah. But then you price it in Bitcoin terms, it's actually like not that significantly more.
Yeah. And most of the, you know, like I would say most, but there's a really enormous number of sort of Fortune 500 companies that are zombie companies. So they're unable to grow, saddled in debt.
Exactly. And like, that's why we as entrepreneurs now, I think, have such a big chance of like, it's probably like building a Bitcoin business. I think it's so many opportunities right now. It's always like all of those different, like in every period of history, there are always those people who see the opportunities and the other ones who see like everything has been done already and so on. And I think we're now at this cusp where like actually inside Bitcoin, we need to build everything all over again, right? It's like, it's actually not that hard to build a Bitcoin business, because there are so many applications and so many different services which exist in the fiat world. But as I said before, it's like Bitcoiners want to do business with Bitcoin companies. So basically anybody out there who is like thinking of becoming an entrepreneur could look at some solutions which live in the fiat world and just adapt it onto a Bitcoin standard. And by focusing on being a Bitcoin positive business long term and having this like humble approach of not taking debt too much and so on, it's like you have the opportunity to actually build something extremely huge within the next 10 to 30 years, because like all of those companies, not like it's going to take some time for them to first of all understand what Bitcoin is, but then until they offer Bitcoin services, it's like they're either going to buy a business which has been doing it already the last 5 to 10 years, or they are so much lagging behind that like the opportunities are actually insane right now as an entrepreneur in the Bitcoin space.
Yeah, I mean, that's exactly what we're doing with Block Rewards, is figuring out how to pay people
exactly
using Bitcoin.
Yeah, and I guess going to be more and more businesses who like want to integrate Bitcoin. So therefore, you're basically creating the tools for all of those companies which I talked about, because
yeah,
like the more people want Bitcoin services, the more people are going to work in the Bitcoin industry, and like they will need your tools.
Yeah, and the more people who understand Bitcoin would rather trade their time for Bitcoin than trade their time for fiat.
Yeah,
yeah,
exactly. What do like? Do you think at some point, or at one point, at what point in history do you think we won't be able to buy Bitcoin anymore?
Yeah, and this is an interesting thing because a lot of people talk about the idea that in the future, the only way you'll be able to get Bitcoin is when you earn it. And I personally don't think that time is very far away.
Okay.
Yeah. I would say within 15 years.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
That's, yeah.
Yeah.
Because if you think about it, we are buying the better money right now.
Yeah.
It's like,
for a ridiculously low premium.
It's crazy.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that's, yeah, that's why like building now a business and actually having already also a treasury in Bitcoin, it's just going to be able to actually hire more people in the future. As you, like, imagine if it's like in 15 years and you build some Bitcoin positive business now already, and you're having like, let's say you can stack 1 million sats every month. You know, if you do this for 15 years, like 1 million sats now is like $1,000. It doesn't sound like a big business or something. But if you keep doing this over the next 15 years, you first of all will be able to increase the 1,000 to maybe 10,000, maybe 200,000. And then those sats will be so much more worth in 15 years when the shift actually happens. So, yeah, I don't know why not more people do Bitcoin businesses.
Yeah, it's actually the reverse of the building your business on debt, because you're actually building your business on something that's appreciating in value at the same time. So it's like having a massive tailwind that's pushing your business farther, faster.
Yeah.
And that thing accelerates. It's yeah.
And the cool thing about this is also you don't need to reinvent anything. Like, you could be a barber and do a Bitcoin barbershop, right?
Yeah.
And just by being a Bitcoin positive business, you will be able to outperform a lot of other barbers. Like, look at Tahini's. It's like the Canadian shawarma guy.
Yeah.
Just by being on a Bitcoin standard and understanding how to market it properly. And he had like, he expanded massively, as I understand, the last 4 or 5 years. And it's though just a shawarma place, right? It's not a good, like, it's not a wallet that he invented or anything. It's a shawarma space, the restaurant, which decided to go on a Bitcoin standard. And then all of those things are just like the functions of doing that. So totally agree.
I completely agree with you. Like, we're at this really sort of interesting time in history where all of this is possible because none of these businesses have been built yet. Mm-hmm. And so the opportunity exists really for anyone who's interested to sort of take the leap and figure out how to do it and potentially benefit of taking the early risk.
Yeah, because it's just so cool to be in the space where you don't know where it's going to be in 10 years. It's,
yeah,
like, nobody in this space knows where we're going, but it's just like you have this feeling, or it's not even the like, I couldn't put it into words what I think it's going to be in 10 to 20 years. It's just like, I know that Bitcoin's going to be huge. So it's like this weird uncertainty, which is just like, I just take the risk, as you say, and the rewards can be massive if everything plays out as we think. But we're still in this time of where it's like, I don't know how it was in the internet boom in the 80s or like 70s, you know, like everybody was or building computers and they were like understanding, yeah, this is going to be huge and so on. But they couldn't imagine what all of this would happen from there. And it feels the same thing right now. We're like, yeah, we talk about this, the future of building Bitcoin businesses. But actually, it's just like this feeling. And I don't think I yet internalized fully what's going to be happening in the next 10 to 20 years.
Yeah, I was, I didn't want to date myself. Obviously, I'm a little bit older than you. I do remember. I remember very well what the internet was like. I'd say, like, you know, the comparison often is this idea that, like, there's a similar number of Bitcoin users today that there was in the internet in 1999. And so I very well remember the internet in 1999. And, you know, at that time, it was kind of like static web pages. That was before e-commerce. The actual kind of plugins that made e-commerce possible didn't even exist yet. Most businesses didn't need to have a web page. I had an email address that I never checked because I never really received emails yet. Even that wasn't a thing. Like, in the late 90s, you didn't need email in a white collar office job.
Yeah.
And you know, so 10 years later, you had had iPhone 1. And like, you know, like that is a massive difference.
Yeah.
And yeah, so for people who are in the late 90s started to really understand early, like, hey, this internet is going to be a thing. It's not that far away and everybody's going to be using it. And then you think about like money is such a, you know, more foundational element of society than any other technology by far. Like we interact with money in just about every aspect of our daily lives. And so you put those two things together. And, if, you know, I think if listeners or people who are trying to understand, you know, you're right. Like nobody knows how big this thing or where it's going to go, but like, it's going to be huge.
Yeah. Like, that's the thing. It's just like, you know, something crazy is going to happen, but we don't know what, right?
Yeah.
Is it really that everything's going to run on Bitcoin and nobody knows like, what Bitcoin is? Because I don't understand how the internet works. I'm not a technical guy. I use it every day. I use it for basically 99% of my interactions if it's like, yeah. And is it going to be the same with Bitcoin as well? Like, I hope so. I think so. But I don't know how the world would look like. You know, what are the repercussions of this? Actually, as we said before, like having a business running on Bitcoin already has so many benefits. What if the whole world runs on Bitcoin? Like,
yeah. I mean, earlier in the conversation, we were talking about art and culture and how those things can be fixed. Like, I have this idea that I think it's we're on the cusp, like an inflection point of sort of a new golden age of humanity, and it has to do with this, you know, sort of involuntary fixing of money, and the money on, you know, has been the biggest problem that nobody understands. And, you know, that's just true. You know, I think like with internet, you know, it's kind of like close the loop on that idea. So from 1999, say 20 years to the end of the 20 teens, now all of a sudden you had all these companies that had nothing to do with the internet being their primary business, now all of a sudden basically being internet companies.
Yeah.
So like McDonald's doing the majority of their sales online is like a completely unfathomable extension of where this all started from them not even knowing they needed a web page.
Yeah.
And so like, you know, 20 years from the mass adoption of the internet, every business has to be an internet business. And that's where I think like, that's how I think this happens where, you know, early now, and very few businesses need to be Bitcoin businesses, starts to become more of a thing. All of a sudden, you actually can't be a business if you're still trying to operate on government money that forces you to be so much better than your Bitcoin competitors because you have to overcome this problem of melting money.
Yeah. It's almost like if you don't adapt it, you're going to fall behind at some point.
Yeah.
Because everybody else will just have all of those massive benefits we talked about. It's like, oh, wait, why is my competitor so much better off than me? Like, what did he change? And if it's like, yeah, it's probably the Bitcoin. Yeah, let me try to do this as well. So,
yeah, you mentioned Seyfedean offline. And one of my absolute favorite Seyfedean quotes is this idea of like, Bitcoin is like gunpowder. And so you can choose not to adapt it. But like when gunpowder was existed, all of a sudden, every army had an immediate decision to make about whether to use guns or to continue to use spears.
Yeah. And the decision is pretty obvious. The decision
is pretty obvious.
Yeah. I think it's going to happen as well. As you said, like I think 10 to 15 years is a good time frame. I mean, it is already pretty crazy to see that it's now on a nation state. Like people talk about it, presidents talk about it. Like 4, 5, 6 years ago, it was like we didn't even really know how to talk about it between us plebs in a sense. You know, it was like, what is this? And I think all of those trends will accelerate as well. The more people come into the space, the more ideas will come into the space, the more money will come in the space. And so I don't know. I think 2025 might be actually a very, very important year if you think about this, and like, because you know, everything kind of like falls together in this year. Like, and I think Bitcoin is at a certain point where like mass adoption can actually happen. Game theory will probably play out 2025. Let's see what the Trump administration actually does with Bitcoin. But I just know that I think in 100 years, people will look at 2025 and be like, oh, holy shit, this actually made a huge difference.
Yeah, I agree. And I think, you know, to your earlier point, it will still take time, and that's probably a good thing if it was a light switch and all of a sudden the whole world was using Bitcoin tomorrow, it would be absolute chaos.
Yeah.
So this,
I just ask myself, like, how much longer can people think Bitcoin is a scam if it always comes back?
Yeah.
Because like now we're at a point, most people heard about Bitcoin, let's say three times already.
Yeah.
Where they thought already, okay, three times it was a scam and here and there. But now it's coming back again. It's like, I think so many people will now actually try to understand it, whereas the last times it was just, it's the bubble again. But like, if it's always coming back, at some point people will be open to it. And it feels like now with like nation states and being involved as well, it gives them a little bit more credibility. The space is actually way more mature than it was 4 years ago. So I think that's what I said, like the overtone shift, the window just shifted massively, I feel. And I can't wait to see what's happening this year. I'm super bullish.
Yeah, me too. Yeah. Very exciting. So maybe as we kind of wrap up the conversation, Max, like what's next for you immediately? Like
for me, what's next? Having people building their brands and businesses and podcasts, kind of. I really want to focus on that. And like also because it is now the bull market, like I'm also trying as the business owner to kind of, get the go wave and get new clients in, try to build healthy new teams. Of course, having in mind that there's a bear market coming. So that's it for me. I have my own podcast, which I also launched like 2 months ago. So it's called Proof of Health, but not just Bitcoin topics, but basically how to live a healthy lifestyle as a Bitcoiner. And just figuring out where all this Bitcoin journey is leading me and meeting more awesome people to talk to like you. Thanks for having me on.
Thank you so much for coming on. Yeah, this was great.
Cool.
And if you're listening and you made it all the way to the end of the episode, I want to thank you as well for tuning in and hope to see you next week.
Thanks for listening to this episode of The Block Reward. We're trying to do something different here, creating accessible conversations meant for people who aren't obsessed with Bitcoin. If you found this episode informative and engaging, hit that subscribe button to make sure you stay updated with future episodes. Your feedback matters. We'd greatly appreciate it if you could take a moment to share your reviews and help us with our goal of creating Bitcoin content that is simple and easy to understand. Bitcoin has an important role to play in the future of finance. It will change the way we save, spend, and invest. Discover why Bitcoin offers a game-changing opportunity for forward-thinking employers by visiting blockrewards.ca. Block Rewards' mission is helping Canadian employers implement strategies for integrating Bitcoin into compensation and benefits. Supercharge your recruitment and retention strategies and help your team members plan for the rising cost of living by rewarding their work with the hardest money ever invented. Special thanks to our top sponsor, Paramount Employee Benefits Consulting, Canada's only Bitcoin-forward benefits and pension advisory. For more information, find them at paramountbenefits.ca. Big shout out to Podigy, our production team that makes all this possible, and BMX Escape for producing our music. Bitcoin is an expansive and dense topic many people walk away from early. To Bitcoin enthusiasts looking for that podcast they can share with friends, family, and colleagues, one they'll actually listen to, we hope that is us. The content of these conversations is meant to be provided for information purposes only. Nothing here is investment advice. Bitcoin is a big topic. Be sure to do your own research before making any personal financial decisions. Thanks for listening.